Hello and welcome to S-Jumper Newsstand with Amanda Chin
and Adeline Huang.
And today we're going to be talking about rom-coms for this month.
Yeah.
Because this month we're doing a rom-com marathon, starting with one of Adeline's favorite.
Truly, it's this week. It's my personal choice. I chose All's Well Ends Well. It's a Hong Kong cult classic romantic comedy produced in 1992 and directed by Clifton Koh.
Yeah, so we're going to start off with a short summary from Wikipedia of the film. And then we're going to go ahead to the segments. You go first.
All's Well Ends Well is a comic romance of three hapless brothers who eventually learn through their amorous exploits and misadventures that love is only won through gradual nurturing and quickly lost through the quick, dishonest, selfish ways which they have always taken for granted. And like Manda said, this short plot was taken from Wikipedia.
And so we're going to do a quick disclaimer that we're not professional filmmakers and we're not film students. We're film lovers who happen to make films. And before anything, we'd like to say and warn you that this review contains spoilers. So please stop listening if you don't want spoilers. Segment one.
Okay, so I know that we would usually start talking about the look and visual aesthetics, but before we go into our first segment, I just like to give everybody a little background story of what All's Well Ends Well is and why I think it's a really special movie. All's Well Ends Well falls into a whole subgenre that I believe not a lot of people are familiar with. So in Hong Kong cinema, there's a genre called Mo Lei Tau films. It's specific to Hong Kong, and it's basically a form of slapstick, and the jokes have a lot of Cantonese wordplay in them.
Kind of like, I guess, like it's just a really whack-ass like, genre, basically.
It is. It's whack. Because Mo Lei Tau actually means nonsense. It's like, we don't understand what's going on. So a lot of the jokes are just really whack. Because so it's like a lot of nonsense.
Western people, it's probably like Napoleon Dynamite.
Probably. I haven't watched Napoleon Dynamite, actually. But we'll get into that later. So the thing with Mo Lei Tau is that, like I said, it's a subgenre, has a lot of wordplay, it's very specific to Hong Kong. So for a lot of international viewers who don't speak Cantonese, it's probably hard for them to understand the jokes. Because there's this little thing that I like to say, it's hard to find a universal language for comedy. Because a lot of the jokes, because it's in Cantonese wordplay, even if you read the subtitles for it, you still wouldn't find it funny because you don't understand the language.
Also, like, intergenerational. Like, people don't really...
Probably, yeah,
like,
yeah,
other
yeah.
people don't really get our jokes. Like, if you tell my mom to watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine, she wouldn't get anything.
Probably. That's also, like, I guess you could say that because Mo Lei Tau is very... it's a very boomer thing. It's either a boomer or a millennial thing. Because
I think more boomer.
Probably more boomer because it, you know.
Because the ages of the actors are probably around our parents' age.
Yeah, because it was popularized around the time.
Grandparents.
Parents. I wouldn't say grandparents.
Oh, wait, no, my grandma's kind of like your dad and mom's.
Yeah, your grandma's young. My grandparents are like dead. But apart from the fact that All's Well Ends Well falls under the Mo Lei Tau category, it's also a Hong Kong cult classic. So a lot of people still watch All's Well Ends Well even today, just for fun, because it was really successful in its time. Fun fact, there's actually about 7 movies under the same name, all named All's Well Ends Well, because I guess it turned into sort of a franchise, sort of like, I don't know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We have an All's Well Ends Well Cinematic Universe.
Maybe it's like a tradition kind of thing.
It's a tradition kind of thing, I guess. Where every few Chinese New Years, a new All's Well Ends Well film gets released. And it's always released around the time of Chinese New Year. So people just flock to the cinemas.
Which also fits with the endings, like all the endings, right?
Yeah.
With
did you notice?
Them going Kung Si Fa Chai.
Yeah, in the ending of All's Well and Well. We're talking about the very first All's Well and Well, by the way, 1992. They end the movie with all the characters going Kung Si Fa Chai. We wish you good fortune. I think
I'm
that's what it
tempted
means.
Tempted to say Hong Pao Na Lai.
It's not that time yet. It's not February yet. It's a few months away.
Well, where's the money, yo? Where's the money, yo? Give me money. Mm-hmm. I'm single. I'm ready. I'm not married. So for all of you that don't know this, but if you're like on Chinese New Year, during Chinese New Year, usually all the singles get
Chinese
red packets.
Red packets filled,
and
red
all
pockets
these,
filled with money.
In red packets, like we have money from like each family members who are married.
Yeah.
And then, so, Hong Pao Na Lai
means where's the red pocket?
And like, Kung Si Fa Chai is actually, I just actually knew this. It means, I hope you get rich.
Yeah.
So it's
yeah.
like, so it's like saying, Kung Si Fa Chai, Hong Pao Na Lai.
I hope you get rich, but
where's
I want
my
share, but I want my share too.
where's my money?
Really, for the Chinese people, the very first thing when it's, you know, it's, Chinese New Year, I don't think you wish them Happy New Year first. You always go Kong Si Fa Chai, which means I hope you get good fortune this year.
Like, I initially thought that
before
means,
Happy New
like,
Year.
I initially thought that means
Happy
New
Year.
Year.
That's what I thought too. Yeah, I only figured out that it means I hope you have good fortune when I was like 18.
Or translating to I hope you get rich. Where's my cash?
Anyway. But yeah, that's like the fun thing about All's Well Ends Well. And I think we can move on to our first segment now, talking about the look and the visual aesthetics of All's Well Ends Well. I don't want to say anything yet because I've watched this movie like about 3 times. Like I said, it's one of my favorites. So I really want to know what Amanda thinks about the movie visually.
Well, I think like the film doesn't really go for any look because then again, it is a comedy. So it's not going for a particular kind of mood.
That's the thing about comedies, isn't it? Its creators don't really pay attention to how a comedy looks.
Because the point of a comedy isn't the visuals. And it's not the cinematography. And it's not the like cool script or like cool storyline that
it's always
have.
The jokes.
It's
the
about
jokes have
trying
to
deliver the jokes properly and trying to get it right to people. And also kind of with a very lighthearted plot.
I don't think it's common to find a visually pleasing comedy movie. I don't know. Can you mention one? Don't even think about the plot or the characters. Just think about a visually pleasing comedy movie that you've ever watched.
I like Napoleon Dynamite.
You're mentioning Napoleon Dynamite again. Tell me why.
Because I feel like you said, it's like slapstick. So it's like, it doesn't really make sense, but it does in its own way. So it's like charming in its own way. And then there's Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Right, Brooklyn Nine-Nine actually did a really good job, like visually. The camera zooms.
The camera zooms were on point. Whenever like they're delivering their jokes, they would like zoom into like the characters.
That's amazing. Color grading is also really good for Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
And also like the edits.
Yeah. Do you remember that one episode where they were, Holt and Jake were interviewing the dentist.
I know.
That episode was really good. The way they edited it.
Their editing was just really good.
Yeah.
And like the camera work too.
But Brooklyn Nine-Nine is god tier. And then you mentioned Napoleon Dynamite. I need to apologize to the viewers. Everyone keeps on talking about Napoleon Dynamite.
Oh, it's
but
the best.
I haven't watched Napoleon Dynamite. Because if you haven't noticed, I'm really into Asian cinema.
This is like Adeline's like Napoleon Dynamite.
This is my Napoleon Dynamite. So, in a way, is Napoleon Dynamite like an American version of Mole Tao?
One, it's a more American version. And two, it's also like a cheaper version.
Eh? Why cheaper?
Because they didn't really have any budget.
Huh.
And they didn't even have characters or like actors who are famous. They literally just took someone and paid him like a few hundred dollars. Or, like really cheap. And
for
then
the main
movie,
character?
For the guy
who plays Napoleon Dynamite?
And then suddenly it just boomed.
Oh my god.
And then he requested more money.
Okay. I get you.
Because, like, The thing that I got from, like, the vibe that I got from this film is that they have pretty good actors, like, pretty well-known actors.
You're talking about Oswald Enswell, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But with Napoleon Dynamite, they didn't have that. It was just everyone being, like, completely new to this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned having, like, a star-studded cast, and Amanda is actually right. So I think... if you want to talk about the look, if you don't have a visually pleasing movie, then I guess when a person comes to a movie, apart from just looking for the plot, you want something that looks good. And that's a feast for the eyes, right? Because if you just want to talk about plot, go read a book. Don't watch a movie, right? But apart from having a visually pleasing movie, I think one thing that grabs an audience's attention is who plays in the movie.
Especially with comedy.
Especially with
comedy. You can't really sell comedy without well-known people. People are just not going to buy it.
Is that the reason why Adam Sandler is, still around?
Yeah, because, like, Adam Sandler started that way, and he just went, like, through, like, all these films with, like, well-known actresses, like, that he's kissing, right? And I'm like, yo, you want to kiss Adam Sandler? Like, imagine.
Oh my God.
Like, no offense, Adam Sandler, but, like, all the ladies that he picks out for his mm-hmm. films are like so good looking. And mm-hmm. I'm not saying that Adam Sandler is bad looking, but they're usually well known actresses mm-hmm. who are like up there. Like mm-hmm. their names are up there.
Okay. Now mention one movie, not an Adam Sandler movie, that's a comedy that you would definitely watch if you saw an actor or actress that you like. One comedy movie that you went to the theater or bought the DVD to watch because you liked the cast.
Not Napoleon Dynamite,
because you don't know who is playing in Napoleon Dynamite. They're not famous.
Comedy.
Which actor or actress will always catch your eye?
Andy Samberg.
For me, it's Stephen Chow.
Andy Samberg.
I'm mentioning Stephen Chow now because I haven't mentioned before, but the whole genre of mole tao along the years turned into, I guess, Stephen Chow's trademark in a way, because 99% of the films that Stephen Chow star in are always under the mole tao genre.
It's just his thing.
And he does a really, really good job at it. I don't know. He just has the face for whack-ass Hong Kong comedy. Don't you think?
Yeah, kind of like blongo.
Blongo. Blongo means he just looks stupid. But yeah. So to me, when I see Stephen Chow on the poster, I'd be like, this is going to be a pretty good movie. It's the same thing when you're watching Kung Fu Hustle.
But then again, I don't watch a lot of comedy, though.
Oh,
so,
you don't...
like.
Well, I don't watch a lot of comedy either.
But you've binged your part of, like, Stephen Chow.
Yes, right? I have. I'm a big fan of Stephen Chow. Each time I feel sad, I always just browse Stephen Chow on YouTube because there's a lot of his movies on YouTube just out there for bootleg.
Who is a good comedian?
Who?
Fred Armisen.
Oh, yeah, he's good! I love Fred Armisen. Portlandia. When the two episodes he appeared in Brooklyn Nine-Nine are my favorite.
Guitar.
Did you watch Los Espookies?
No, not yet.
That's good. Fred Armisen is in it. You need to watch it. It's an HBO series. Anyway, we kind of went off topic there. Let's go back to Oswald Enswell. But yeah, after talking about the star-studded cast, apart from Stephen Chow, I think Clifton Cole made a really great decision casting all these really big Hong Kong names in that time. I know that you're not familiar with Hong Kong cinema, but I am. And I know for a fact that the names he got, like Stephen Chow, definitely a big household name. Sandra Ng, she's still a big star until now. I know for a fact that if Sandra Ng is in a movie, it's probably going to be funny.
Basically, Stephen Chow is like the Adam Sandler.
He is! He's like Chinese Adam Sandler. That's amazing. Stephen Chow's better though. I'm sorry, Adam Sandler, but I really like Stephen Chow.
Yeah, because I feel like the jokes are weirder than Adam Sandler jokes. Because Adam Sandler jokes kind of sometimes don't hit you at all. They're just not funny.
Let's be completely honest. A lot of the jokes hit, right? In All's Well Ends Well.
A lot of it, but there are a lot of it that are also insensitive. Which we're going to talk about later.
Yeah. Anyway, Stephen Chow, Sandra Ng, Teresa Mo was also a really big name. Who else?
Maggie Cheung.
Maggie Cheung is also a really big name. I can't believe they got Maggie Cheung to star in a
stupid movie.
Yeah, in a stupid whack ass movie. Because, I just assumed she would be a more serious actress, you know? Last but not least, Leslie Cheung. Dear God.
Bi.
Leslie Cheung.
He's bi.
Leslie Cheung in the 90s, he was at his prime, man.
The fact that he's bi and out,
amazing, immaculate. I need to be honest with you guys. The only reason, no, not really the only reason, but how
one
I
of
first
the only reason
how I first came across All's Well Ends Well is because I had this Leslie Cheung phase in high school. I was obsessed with him, still obsessed with him. I love him so much. He's my hero. So when I knew that he starred in All's Well Ends Well, I was like, I gotta find this movie. I scoured all over the internet, and the last time I went to Hong Kong, I went to those DVD sellers on the side of the street asking for an All's Well Ends Well Blu-ray.
Did you get it?
No, I did not. I'm sorry. I torrented.
It's not even shameful. It's kind of just hard to get everyone to get films.
It's really hard because especially like Hong Kong movies, old Chinese movies that aren't blockbuster, that don't win awards, it's super hard to get them. And like I said, I was obsessed with Leslie Cheung. But I got it in its original Cantonese audio. So it was even better. Because Cantonese, I don't know, it just sounds funny.
But you also have the Russian audio.
Oh, right. Yeah, that was whack. I have all three. I have Russian, Cantonese, and Mandarin audio. Can you believe it? That's how much I love All's Well Ends Well. But anyway,
should we talk about the characters now?
I actually wanted to talk a little bit about the costumes, since like I said, not much to talk about the look and the visuals.
Oh
right,
Maggie Cheung's character.
Yeah, costume wise, spot on.
And like it fits her well.
Yeah, right?
Especially since she's been in like a lot of big movies before that.
Mm-hmm. She pulls those costumes off so well.
Yeah. Especially with, like, the Madonna one and the Pretty Woman and Ghost.
Okay, a little background story. Maggie Cheung's character, she's called Hollyuk, which is a play on words for Hollywood, because her character is this naive and innocent young girl who's just obsessed with anything Hollywood-related. So, she goes through quite a lot of costume changes, and every single costume is always a nod towards a Hollywood movie that her character is currently obsessed with.
I can't remember the first one.
The first one was Madonna.
And then there's Pretty Woman.
There's Pretty Woman.
And Ghost.
There was Ghost. Arnold Schwarzenegger.
But it wasn't
Terminator.
Her.
But it wasn't her. It was Stephen Chow's character. There was just a lot of costume changes. There were nods to like really famous Hollywood movies. And let me just say, every single costume, spot on. It
especially
really looked like the exact
sharp
replica.
Titties.
With the sharp titties when she first appeared with the Madonna costume. That was really good. But yeah.
I can't believe they made Stephen Chow the Playboy.
Isn't that all Stephen Chow movies?
Yeah.
He looks ugly as hell, but
he made
every,
himself.
Yeah, in every single movie, he makes himself the guy
everyone
like,
guy.
The good looking guy.
Sandler.
Oh my god.
Adam Sandler.
Chinese Adam Sandler.
Parallel.
That's amazing though. But anyway, like I said, I don't think there's not much to say when it comes to visual aesthetics. So I think we'll end our first segment.
But it does
there.
Have its own charm.
It does, right? It's very mole tao with how
it's an own genre basically. Mm-hmm. It's like its own thing.
With how the director just did not give a shit about how it looks, with the bad visual effects, the shitty jokes, very mole tao.
Okay.
But moving on to our second segment.
Segment 2, plot and characters.
Okay. So basically the main characters here are the three couples, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've got the elder brother and his wife,
mm-hmm.
Leslie Cheung and Teresa Mo, and then Maggie Cheung and Stephen Cho's character.
Mm-hmm.
So because we were talking about Maggie Cheung and Stephen Cho's character, how about we get into their relationship first?
But their relationship, I don't think there's a lot of thing to talk about in any of those relationships.
To me, their relationship was the wackest out of them.
Like, I just feel like it is a family that is based on, like, it is a story that is very based on Chinese culture and how family is above everything. And how even if you don't have friends, at least you have your family.
Now that you mentioned family, how about we talk about the elder brother and Sandra Ng's character?
Yeah, I guess we'll start from there.
Because,
like, they were talking about getting a divorce, and after they're separated because the ex-husband cheated on her.
The ex-husband was a douchebag.
Yeah, and like how he treated her like shit, and then after they have separated, he married his
mistress.
Mm-hmm. And then he ended up thinking, like, you know what? I want my wife back because she's hot now.
It's a big... In a way, it's a big cliche to a lot of romance movies, right? How the male character doesn't realize how lucky he was, and then he's like, I want to go back, I'm sorry, like, forgive me.
Yeah, but then again, it's also very Chinese in a way that,
it's
like...
It's a very realistic parallel to real-life Chinese,
because
right?
It ended with them getting back together.
Yeah. How many Chinese couples that you know are still together today in an unhappy marriage just
because
to save face?
Save face? A lot.
A lot, right? I know a lot. I know a lot of people in unhappy marriages who just saving because we don't want to bring dishonor to the family. Or, you know, the classic reason they go like, oh, we're staying for the kids. That's bullshit.
Yeah.
If you want to get a divorce, get a divorce.
And like what your dad said?
My dad mentioned something about family before. And if you notice, the underlying reason why Sandra Ng's character decides to get back with this douchebag of a husband is because she loves the family that she married into. She's best friends with Leslie Cheung's character, her brother-in-law. She loves her mother and father-in-law very much. As much as she hates her ex-husband, her soon-to-be ex-husband, which doesn't become her ex-husband, she actually stayed for the family and not for the elder brother's character, right?
Because, like, then again, Chinese culture, like what your dad said,
yeah,
is like
literally
number
this is
one.
Like,
everything else is number seven.
This
right?
is literally like I'm quoting my dad word for word. This is something that he repeats to all five of us kids again and again. It's always family number one. Everything else number seven. Bro, it's not even number two. Everything else is just number seven.
And also part of why we don't put our elderlies
in nursing homes. Yeah.
Once you do that, you're immediately out of the family certificate.
There's this thing that I keep on saying is that when I disappoint my parents, nama kita dicoret dari kartu keluarga. So I don't know what it is in English.
Dikeluarin dari kartu keluarga.
Dicoret guys, di tip X.
Not even di tip X. Just
they just rip it. They just rip it. Exacto knife it out. But anyway, the phrase that I said,
like,
before,
getting you kicked out of the family certificate.
Yeah,
or
I don't know
if
people have family certificates
that
out there, but in Indonesia it's a thing.
Yeah.
It's basically like a piece of paper that states the names and like SSN of everyone in the family.
And also like your status, your marriage status.
Yeah, so it proves like legally you're a family, which is whack. I'm just saying, if any of the kids decide to put their parents in a nursing home, our names would just disappear from the family certificate, like, the minute we send them in the nursing home.
It's not even that. It's more like, you're just never going to be invited to any Chinese New Year
dinners
anymore.
No matter, it doesn't matter how good you are as a person. If you, as a Chinese, send your parents into a nursing home, you're automatically going to Chinese hell. What's the name of the kindest person you know? Jesus. Say Jesus was a Chinese person and he sends his parents to a nursing home, Jesus would go to Chinese hell automatically. He doesn't even need to die. He'd just be in hell.
He'd just be buried alive.
Mm-hmm. By his own mother.
Was he even buried alive?
He was, wasn't he?
Oh, shit.
shit. Was resurrected.
Insensitive.
My bad.
No, me being insensitive. Sorry.
But yeah, now you know how unreligious I actually am. But anyway.
I just mean that we're all going to be buried alive or if we put our parents in nursing homes.
Mm-hmm. Which, again, the aspect of family, it fits so well into the theme of All's Well Ends Well as being a Chinese New Year movie.
That is the theme, and that is what Chinese culture is all about.
Yeah, right? Especially in its context of being a Chinese New Year movie, it fits so perfectly well because for Chinese families, celebrating Chinese New Year is so important. We're always celebrating it together with our family, no matter what. Even if we hate our family.
Yeah, it's like, it's
always. We reserve one day a year.
There's always the Chinese New Year night where you're wearing brand new clothes and then you're meeting all your family, like a big extended family in someone's house. And like grandma or like someone elderly would cook for all of us.
Yeah. I don't know how many Chinese people out there actually like make such a big deal out of Chinese New Year, because I make a big deal out of it. Chinese New Year is my favorite holiday. Fuck Halloween. My family doesn't celebrate Christmas. I don't even care about like regular New Year. I just give a shit about Chinese New Year. That's my favorite holiday.
What I like Chinese New Year is one, the hongbao.
Chinese New Year has given me one, a lot of money, and two, a lot of movies like All's Well Ends Well. So you need, listeners, you need to understand how much I love Chinese New Year.
And for me, two, is the food.
Yes!
And hanging out with your cousins.
Oh my god, yes. And you mentioned hongbao. Did you notice at the end of
they were All's giving
Well,
hongbao.
Yeah, at the end of the All's Well Ends Well movie?
Maybe we should get a bit into like what Chinese New Year is all about. Like what do we do during Chinese New Year? So like when you wake up during Chinese New Year, you usually would go up to your parents and then say "Gong xi fa zhai, hong bao nan lai."
Yeah. You
and
know.
Gong xi fa zhai. I thought all my life. I fucking thought Gong xi fa zhai means
Happy New Year, right?
But it's not. New Year. It's not. Fucking, I hope you get rich.
It means we wish you good fortune.
But in an underlying sense, I hope you get rich.
Yeah. Yeah, because after...
Hong bao nan lai is, where's my money?
Because immediately after Gong xi fa zhai, we go Hong bao nan lai.
Where's my red packet?
Yeah. Pocket, actually, not packet, because in Chinese New Year, the married couples in the family are given this mandatory responsibility of giving out red pockets filled with money to those who aren't married yet.
So don't get married.
So don't get married when you're Chinese. Yeah, just stay single for the rest of your life, and you're going to continue getting red pockets. You know, life hack for all our Chinese friends out there.
I don't get that anymore because I'm overseas.
Oh, see, here's the difference. I always make an effort of coming back home during Chinese New Year. I don't give a shit. I don't miss Chinese New Year. I never miss Chinese New Year.
It's a very important.
Yeah.
You literally go home?
Yeah, these two previous Chinese New Years, I've always been home.
What?
I've never celebrated it away from my family before.
Dude, I've never been home for Chinese New Year in the past 2 years.
Oh my god. That is so sad. Then what do you do?
Hang out with my friend?
Well, okay. There's still a familial aspect to it then. That's your found family. Chinese New Year is a time when you're spending time with
still,
your family.
I guess like I just kind of forgot what it felt like to be with like your extended family.
It gets I shouldn't say this. I love my extended family. Truly.
I love my cousins.
I also love the red pockets that they give me.
Oh yeah, I love that more.
But yeah.
Do you think we should start talking about the second couple?
Yeah. Let's talk about, since we don't have a lot to talk about Maggie Cheung and Stephen Chow's character.
It's very shallow. It's just like, okay, this playboy guy, this fuck guy, like fuck boy.
Not much closure.
Like meets this girl.
That's naive.
And then he got caught cheating on her with this other girl, and then he hits his head, and then he had like a brain damage kind of thing, which made him mad, like crazy. And then the only girl that was taking care of him was Maggie Cheung's character.
Yeah.
And then he ended up going like, you know what? I think I love you. Yeah, something like that. But that's basically it.
Yeah, it's pretty basic. Let's talk about Leslie Cheung and Teresa Moh's, like, relationship.
Oh, yeah. That was kind of weird. Like, I like the aspect that they made Leslie Cheung's character still bisexual, like, still feminine. But
before
also...
we go deeper into that, just a little background story of who Leslie Cheung is and what his impact really is to the Hong Kong cinema scene. In 1992... Leslie Cheung had, I think he just came out as bisexual. He was the very first Asian artist who was brave enough to come out as bisexual. Not gay.
Bisexual.
It's a very uncommon term in 1992. And let's be honest, even today, bisexuals still get a lot of shit. People are always like, pick a side, pick
people
a team.
Like
you can't be bisexual. A lot of people are biphobic. So for him to be brave enough to come out and explicitly say the words bisexual, it was a really big thing. Like I said, Leslie Cheung is my hero. Rest in peace. I love him so much. So
yeah, like I said, there's like a lot of I do like that it is progressive in kind of portraying a bisexual man, that even though he is feminine and he also likes men and women, he ended up with a woman, because like it's kind of saying that he could end up with a woman.
If you wanted
to. And that is like a good portrayal.
Because
usually these days there's only been like a lot of mostly just gay, like gay portrayals or lesbian portrayals.
You don't even have a lot of bisexual portrayals in today's cinema.
There's some, but not a lot.
Not a lot.
Especially back then, counting that it's just like, this is like 1992. And then, but I do want to talk about the fact that there's also some homophobic aspect to the jokes that they made.
Obviously. Now, we did mention at the very beginning of this episode that there are a lot of insensitive jokes in this movie that definitely would not fly in
this
time.
Yeah, and it's not like we're making a pass for it. Oh, it's a good
we're
movie, watch
not.
It. Like, but we are talking about it and trying to like acknowledge these insensitive jokes, such as the rape jokes that they constantly make again and again, and also some sexual harassment jokes, such as like hitting a girl's butt or a man's butt
in the elevator.
And also like the racist remark made by the mother and father-in-law saying that, oh, send a Filipino maid back to her country.
There were just a lot of racist, sexist, and even homophobic jokes. In the movie. Again, we're not saying that it's all right, but I would just like to mention how there is no universal language for comedy. A lot of times, here's the thing, a lot of times when it comes to comedy, it's always borderline offensive, right? It's always going to offend a certain group that's watching it. It's very difficult for people to be able to make comedy that doesn't offend anyone.
I disagree. Given that the time that we are in right now, with a lot of research and a lot of education, and knowing that Generation Z is one of the most educated generation, I think it's easier for us to make jokes.
People
that
are so much more skilled now
because we are able to get more education than back then in 1990s or even way before that. Because like one of even my favorite films, Pierre Le Fou, by Jean-Luc Godard, they presented. Yellowface, and I'm not saying that it's okay, but he did it to mock the Vietnam War that the Americans were having. But also, I'm never saying it's okay. I'm acknowledging what he did and saying it's fucked up. Because you, in no way possible, is a yellow face okay, especially in cinema, especially as someone who's Chinese, like Chinese Indonesian. I was offended by it. But I'm also acknowledging that the time that it was in, it was 1960s, and people didn't have the education that we have now, like this film.
Yeah. For something that came out in 1992, there were progressive aspects to it, like Leslie Cheung's character and portrayal of, you know, his bisexual personality.
It's like what you said, like going forward five steps and going back.
Yeah, five steps forward, three steps back. Because... even if they had Leslie Cheung in it, an openly bisexual actor playing a sort of bisexual man in the movie, there were, like you said, the racist jokes, the sexist jokes.
There were a lot of problematic things.
A lot of problematic jokes. A lot of the jokes were problematic.
It was. But then again, we're also saying that the target audience for this
very film. Different, right?
And it was a very different time.
Very different time, very different generation.
But even now, though, like, I'm just saying, a lot of Asian cinema are also still very homophobic, misogynistic, mm-hmm. and racist, and all that. Like, there's still a lot of films nowadays in Asian cinema that are not as progressive,
mm-hmm.
because the audience here just, you know.
They don't care. They're pretty deaf when it comes to...
A lot of Asian people mm-hmm. are, like, I'm not trying to be like, oh, like, it's better to be Western or anything like that, but a lot of, from my experience, like...
Mine too.
Yeah, a lot of experience is that, like, a lot of Asian people that I know... are more ignorant towards these things. Like,
yeah, ignorant.
Yeah, a lot of time I try to educate them about it. Like, for example, like maybe when a friend of mine says the N-word and all that, like, or the F-word,
mm-hmm.
like calling someone who's gay the F-word, or mm-hmm. maybe just saying like something's gay,
mm-hmm.
like, and every time I try to educate them about it, I'd be calling them out, like, yo, you can't say that. This is why. I'm giving them a lesson of like, okay, like, gay people or like black people have been oppressed all this time, and mm-hmm. like this is all their history and why they're using these words now to empower themselves and why you can't see that. But a lot of times with Asian people especially, they don't care. They just don't give a fuck.
And this is coming from firsthand experience to all the listeners out there. We're not trying to offend anyone, but from firsthand experience.
Especially, yeah, if you're like open-minded, talking, props to you. You know, like, you're mm-hmm. you're like a very well-educated person.
And talking to our parents, aunts, uncles, sometimes even our own peers. Asians, Chinese, are not the most quote-unquote woke people, you know. A lot of Westerners are definitely more educated about this. But we're not giving it a pass. We're not giving Asian ignorance a pass at all.
We're not.
Asians could be better when it comes to understanding about what can be made into jokes or what and mm-hmm. what can't. But again, when we're talking about All's Well Ends Well, think about the fact that
context.
That it's made in 1992. There wasn't a lot of
information as we do have now.
Yeah. There weren't a lot of activists talking about cultural appropriation per se, or, you know, people advocating about racism. I worded that wrong. Advocating about not being racist. I'm not saying advocating racism. Sorry about that.
But yeah, I get what you're saying. It's more like the context the film was in. And acknowledging some parts of it that are progressive, but mm-hmm. also acknowledging what they did wrong and trying to be better.
Mm-hmm.
But then this is what I'm saying, like, we should expect better now because of the information that we get to access.
Mm-hmm.
We should expect better from Asian cinema now, like also Indonesian cinema. Because mm-hmm. I still notice a lot of like people who are actually open-minded make films that are borderline offensive mm-hmm. and insensitive with the jokes.
Mm-hmm. It's like people can do better.
Yeah,
they're trying to do better.
They're trying to, but sometimes. When they're trying to portray gay characters, especially in Indonesian films that I've mm-hmm. seen, they don't portray them correctly.
It's very stereotypical, isn't it? It's always the flamboyant, high-pitched voice.
Because they don't bring in an actual gay person to double-check.
Or at least they never do enough research, don't they?
It's way easier to bring in someone who's, like, gay. To actually like try to see if it matches, if it's insensitive or not.
If they just put in enough effort,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Because I feel like the best research you can do is talking to someone who's actually part of the LGBTQ community.
Mm-hmm. Representation, baby.
Especially if you're not part of the LGBTQ community.
But anyway, we did talk about, say, plot and characters for a little bit. But I know for a fact that there's not much to talk about here, because it is a feel-good movie, a rom-com, you know, you go and watch a rom-com movie you're not there to analyze anything about it. You just want to end the movie feeling good. Like, All's Well Ends Well is a movie that I revisit time and time again every time I feel sad, because to me, it's hilarious to me. And I feel like we can move on to the third and final segment. Now, I know for the previous episodes, we're always talking about ending and conclusion and whether or not we think that it fits the story, whether or not we think it's satisfying.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't... I think we can change things up today because I know, like, when it comes to rom-com movies, the endings always have to be feel-good. Don't you think that it's weird for Sandra Ng's character to still return back to the husband?
Oh, yeah.
No. Even after he treated her like a douchebag?
Well, it's like what we said. Like, second three could be, like, changes in endings that we think would suit the characters better.
What would you change about the ending?
I think I would make, like, I don't know. Who's, like, the woman with the married, who's married?
Married with the elder brother?
Yeah.
Sandra Ng.
Okay, Sandra Ng's character, I feel like if this wasn't a Chinese film,
mm-hmm.
I would say a better ending was mm-hmm. for her to walk away from her husband
mm-hmm.
just because her husband wasn't treating her right. And she deserves so much better than that.
She does. But because it's
Chinese culture.
And because it's a feel-good movie.
And because family is above everything.
Family
Chinese
number one.
Films,
everything else number seven.
She ends up with the husband.
She returns to her husband even though her husband's a douchebag.
She's sort of like, shit.
Yeah. She was about to divorce the husband, but then she ends up together with him anyway at the end.
I like how she played him, though.
Oh, yeah. For a minute there, we thought that she was going to leave him.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, were we all disappointed.
I was disappointed.
But I feel like every single character's ending was satisfying to me. Because it's a very typical Mo Le Tao ending. Everything has to feel good.
I kind of disagree with Leslie Cheung's character, though.
Really?
Because, like, okay, I do like that they were together in the
mm-hmm.
end, but then I didn't like the aspect that they had to change Teresa
and Leslie Cheung's characters nearing the end.
No, more like Teresa's appearance.
Ah, yeah. She grew that long hair.
Because, like, I feel like it would be a stronger ending if they didn't change anything.
Of course.
And they just still ended up together. That kind of proves the fact that women can look masculine and still be straight.
Because it's no longer a stereotype. They were always making fun of the whole stereotype. Like, you know how it starts really strong? Where these two characters are definitely not a stereotype. It's like an exact opposite of how a man or a woman has to be in Chinese culture, right? You know how women are always asked to be dainty, innocent, you
which was what
your
I
voice.
Like about the film.
Yeah.
That they ended up together even despite their differences.
However.
But the ending didn't satisfy me because
they returned to that typical
like they had to
feminine
change,
masculine.
They had to change the appearances of these characters, especially Teresa's character.
She grew long hair.
Yeah,
out of,
like,
nowhere.
Because, like, it would be definitely a stronger ending if they both ended up not being stereotypical male and female heterosexual relationship.
I'm just saying, there was so much sexual tension throughout the movie between those two characters. I loved that they ended up together. Didn't really like that
and
they reverted back to the whole feminine and masculine archetype.
Yeah, because it kind of just gives out, like, a bad vibe of, like, oh, you just need a man to change you. Kind of.
Yeah, that was annoying. That was a bit annoying.
Because, like, as someone who presents more masculinely and being said that
mm-hmm.
all the time by everyone around me,
it's
especially
annoying.
My family, too,
mm-hmm.
like, it's annoying to me because, like, oh, you know what? You just need a man to change you. Like, it's just, that's why I was offended.
The amount of times my parents would say the same thing to me, so annoying. But I still found it hilarious. I'm sorry, I still found it really hilarious. Like, I know that all the jokes are super offensive in that movie, but it was really funny to me. Also, I guess I'm just giving them a pass because they're all making, like, super Chinese jokes, and everyone's Chinese, so I'm like, this is funny, I'm gonna give you a pass. But anyway, I think that's enough about the ending. Like, in conclusion, I think that the ending is pretty satisfying. Manda thinks that a lot of things could be changed, and I agree. But because it is a feel-good movie, it's written that way.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to talk more. I want to, just for this episode, I don't want to add a new segment per se, but I want to talk about the idea of comedy. Because one thing that, this is my personal opinion, okay? Please, no one get offended by what I say. A lot of comedy is situated to be borderline offensive. Not even borderline offensive. It's always, comedy is always going to be offensive to a certain group of people. Which is what's going on with All's Well, Ends Well right now. I'm just giving it this out as an example. Like, you mentioned that you were offended with a lot of the jokes. When the first time I watched All's Well, Ends Well, I didn't get offended with any of it. And I know for a fact that a lot of the jokes actually took a jab at communities that I relate to as well. Communities that I'm a part of. But I never took it to heart. I just thought, haha, that's so funny. Because, you know, they're making jokes about the stereotypes within certain communities and all that. And which really, these things really make me wonder. Like, what kind of comedy is considered to be offensive in today's time? Like, what wouldn't fly? And why is it that, looking at the history of Moletao, for example, Moletao's peak was around the 80s and 90s. Now when we've reached the 2000s and 2020s, there's not a lot of Moletao films anymore. And maybe the reason why is because a lot of the jokes, like I said, wouldn't fly. A lot of them are offensive.
Mm-hmm.
What's your opinion on that?
Well, which opinion?
Because I feel like a lot of audiences today, in a certain sense, are pretty sensitive to what certain groups consider as comedy. Well, why is it that jokes that were considered really funny in 1992 would be considered offensive today?
Generation. The target audience.
Elaborate.
Because, like, back then, like, 1990s, I guess it was a time for, like, either millennials or... What's, like, after baby boomers?
Millennials.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, millennials. I guess, like, it was more, like, two baby boomers and millennials.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the older millennials.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that are, like, maybe... that are born in 1970s.
Isn't that boomer?
I don't think
that's
so.
That's boomer.
Is that boomer?
Yeah. Millennials are, like...
80s?
1980s,
90s. Okay. So, boomers. Then I guess it's boomers. Because, like, it's a very boomer thing to joke about things that are sensitive nowadays.
Isn't a boomer joke, like, I hate my wife?
Yeah. like that.
Right.
Things like that. That don't sound intelligent.
That's an interesting choice of words. How, like, older generation jokes just don't sound intelligent.
They're like trashy jokes that are meant to hurt people.
Now, in Moletao's context, I wouldn't say.
I wouldn't say
that
hurt
time,
people.
It's like intelligent because, like I said, Moletao has a lot of wordplay, Cantonese wordplay.
Yeah, but I mean, like, it's, I mean, intelligent in a way that it's like well-researched, it's well researched, well, like, you know the topic quite well and is familiar with it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean intelligent as in, oh, you have to be like an intellectual or you have to be knowing science and all that. But it's more like to the research type of thing. Like research, well researched, you're familiar with the topic kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Instead of just making stereotypical jokes.
Mm-hmm. Because then again, like, now, if we're seeing, like, that joke, I hate my wife. It's like, then why did you marry your wife in the first place?
Mm. I think, now, I know for a fact that Manda and I are going to have really contrasting opinions regarding the language of comedy, I guess.
Because I don't believe that comedy have to be offensive. I feel like comedy like Brooklyn Nine-Nine, even though we're acknowledging the fact that they still make fatphobic jokes, but a lot of their comedy is more towards not offensive. Like, it's not offending anyone except for the fat jokes.
Yeah. Brooklyn Nine-Nine was able to be funny without being offensive to, like, anyone.
Which is, I think, what's great about comedy.
That's amazing. It's not the writers are really good.
Like, it's not supposed to offend anyone, in my opinion. If you can get good comedy, good writing.
But think about this. Would our parents like Brooklyn Nine-Nine?
That's the thing. That's what I said. Generation. Target audience.
Our parents wouldn't understand Brooklyn Nine-Nine. They'd be like, what the fuck is this?
Because, like I said, like, a lot of boomers don't want to listen to. They think they're right.
Of course. They went through a lot. There was a whole cocaine phase. Oh, no, I'm sorry. That was really stereotypical.
Well, we're going through environment.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, maybe Mole Tao should stay as a boomer and millennial generation thing.
And even if Mole Tao were to surface back up, I feel like...
Now, I have a question for you. If a new Mole Tao movie came out in 2020 with the same formula as all the other Mole Tao movies, you know, with all the rape jokes, the sexist, racist jokes, would you still go to the theater and watch it?
No.
Why?
Even with this film, I'm kind of, like, I don't really know how to feel about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't know how to feel about it if it came out this year. You get what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would be more offended.
I get why. I could get why. I guess in this sense...
Because this is now we're kind of giving a pass to it because of the year that it was released.
Uh-huh.
But if it were to come out now with all the information that we could access in the internet easily, just like with one click.
You're saying that people should give
people
more
should
effort.
Know better.
Should know better. Now, I have a very different opinion regarding this. Like I said, I mean, I'm a Gen Z myself. I'm gonna sound super arrogant and ignorant when I say this. But to me, like I said, it's very hard to find a universal language of comedy. My personal opinion is that comedy will always offend certain communities at some point. And I like it when comedians or comedic writers are brave enough. Well, I wouldn't say brave enough. Are, I guess, I don't know how to find the right word. Okay, we'll stick with brave enough. Are brave enough to take controversial topics and create jokes out of it.
But
that's what I think.
But isn't it like when you're playing a game and someone would say, oh my god, that's so gay? It's kind of the same, isn't it?
But
it's
that's not funny.
But that is also kind of like what you're implying, too, that you think are like racist jokes. Or someone maybe in the gaming like community would be like, oh my god, I'd smack that girl's ass or something like that.
But that's not funny.
But aren't the jokes kind of the same with Mole Tao jokes?
Ooh, you're opening my eyes.
So why do you think it's funny, it's okay for Mole Tao to be like that, but not okay in the real world?
Ooh. Huh. Why?
Or are you just making a pass because it's Chinese?
Maybe I am.
Because if even in the real world, someone would say to you, oh my god, that shirt is so gay. And someone who's straight.
Yo, but that's not even funny. But there's no wordplay, no proper execution.
Okay,
they're just like, that's gay.
But imagine someone saying those jokes that are in the Mole Tao genre in real life.
That wouldn't pass, bro.
Right? That's what I was saying.
Oh, but let me say one last thing. I'm just being the devil's advocate over here. Whatever I say right now in no way represents my character. I'm really sorry. But isn't that the whole point of movies? For people to find... Like, the whole thing about Mole Tao is its nonsense and absurdity. So when Mole Tao shows that absurdity in a sense that, like, shit, you try to do Mole Tao shit in real life, that wouldn't fly. It can only fly inside the Mole Tao universe. Isn't that the whole point, the whole charm of Mole Tao? Why do you think that Adam Sandler movies are still a big hit now? Because Adam Sandler still
has... Because the target
has...
audience are boomers.
Oh. Do you know any other Gen Z who loves watching Adam Sandler movies?
No.
No? You're right, I don't know.
Most of them would watch it just because their parents watch it. Like, they'd go to the cinema because their parents dragged them to.
But they wouldn't be excited when they see an Adam Sandler movie.
They wouldn't personally pick that movie out of all the movies that are in the cinema.
Maybe I'm just whack for liking Mo Lei Tao, but y'all...
Or maybe you're just making a pass because it's Chinese.
Oh my god! But no, I'm just a really big fan of the Mo Lei Tao genre.
Well, I do like why you like it, because it has, like, nonsense, like, whack-ass
it's just
nonsense.
Whack-ass shit!
But I feel like they could make those nonsense without having those racist, homophobic, and all those insensitive remarks. Or jokes. Like, I think it could still work. Because personally, that's kind of my kind of humor, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, weird stuff. But I don't think I could make a pass if they immediately make either one of those insensitive jokes. Because, like I said, Napoleon Dynamite, I feel like I haven't watched it again, so I don't think I caught any controversial or sensitive topics that they were talking about in the film, but it still managed to be weird and whack without having to be offensive. Like when he was like, Trina, you fat llama, come get some dinner. Like, just the way he say it, you know, it's like whack as heck.
Okay.
And this face, he was just like... But yeah, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, you can still be whack without having to be offensive. Good comedy to me is comedy that don't have to be offensive, but it's funny.
That is God-tier comedy, isn't it? When it's funny without being
offensive.
That's
why I'm saying that it's hard to find quality comedy.
It's a whole skill.
Like, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, without the fat jokes, like, it would be, like, good comedy. Because they managed to be whack, but without, you know, without being offensive.
But say we take out these offensive aspects from Mo Lei Tao movies, do you think that they would still fall under the Mo Lei Tao category?
Yeah, for sure. Because they still have those, like, really weird going around kung fu
things. You're right.
Like, with taking out all the rape jokes, sexual harassment jokes, and racist remarks, and homophobic jokes, it would still be Mo Lei Tao, in my opinion. Just because I've never seen other genres that have the same kind of formula with Mo Lei Tao.
You've watched Kung Fu Hustle. Mm-hmm. That's like 50% Mo Lei Tao.
Yeah.
And I think not that
I haven't seen it again. I haven't seen it again. Yeah. So when I saw it, I was like a small kid, so I wouldn't know if some things are insensitive.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I have to rewatch it.
You know,
it
as
again.
A kid, you just eat shit up.
Yeah, like a sponge.
We're gonna have to talk about Kung Fu Hustle
at
some point in this podcast. I fucking love that movie.
But yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't think you can make a pass on something just because of the culture. But also, but I do get why you like it.
Mm-hmm.
Like the charm of the film itself and the genre.
You know, before talking to Manda today, I never thought about it that way. That I was probably subconsciously giving a pass because it is Chinese cinema. And I will always be biased towards Asian cinema. I love Hong Kong cinema especially. Like, I eat that shit up. I love it. My favorite directors from Hong Kong, my favorite actors from Hong Kong, is Hong Kong anything. So maybe that's why all this time I never found Mo Lei Tao problematic. I always assumed that. I can see why it can't fly today, and I respect it when people say that, wow, this shit is offensive, like, why would anyone even make something like this in 2020? But a certain part of me is also saying, y'all sensitive as hell. But maybe the reason why I'm saying that is because I'm ignorant too. It's like I've never been put in a situation where I'm scared for who I am or which community I'm associated with. So that's why I'm able to laugh at Mo Lei Tao movies. But is it bad for people out there who enjoy a sort of quote-unquote offensive comedy? Or should people really refine their tastes now that it's 2020 and everything's so much more progressive?
I think... I think it's okay for you to enjoy some things that are offensive, but then acknowledge what's offensive in there and the things that you like about it. So it's like separate both. Do you get what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, for example, for me, like I said, Jean-Luc Godard's film, Pierre Le Fou, they had a yellow face in it. And I absolutely cannot tolerate it because it's yellow face, especially because
mm-hmm.
I'm Chinese. But they did it too because they wanted to bash the Americans for the Vietnam War. So it's good to take the good things that they have about the film, but then also acknowledge the bad things about the film.
Mm-hmm.
So like not giving it a pass or anything, acknowledging, telling people that this is what happened and trying to be better.
Mm-hmm. So here's another interesting thing to think about. The movie you mentioned by Jean-Luc Godard, is it considered a classic?
Yeah.
Why would something like that with, you know, offensive aspects to it be considered a classic by people today?
Because Jean-Luc Godard is one of the pioneers for French New Wave cinema, which makes us have the cinema that we have today.
I see.
He pioneered these shots, these jump cuts, and all these, like, okay, back then in the 60s, cinema, when two characters of our character wants to move from one place to another, they had to follow him going the journey that he's taking from west one place to the other.
Mm-hmm.
And they have all these rules, but Jean-Luc Godard was one of the pioneers who said, you know what, fuck it, we're not going to follow these rules. We're going to do everything else besides the rules that are set in cinema. So that's why these films by him were famous. I mean, are famous.
Mm-hmm. So in a way you're saying, like, you can't ever look at a piece of artwork and go, this is 100% shitty. This is 100% good. There's always going to be positive and negative aspects to it. And in order for you to you need to be able to differentiate these positive and negative aspects.
Yeah, and learn
because,
from it.
Yeah, because when I asked you whether Jean-Luc Godard's movie was considered a classic, even with such a blatantly racist aspect to it, people are still able to learn from it.
Mm-hmm.
We're not giving it a pass, but overall it's still a good movie.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Which goes the same for Mo Lai Tao. It's like, don't you think without these offensive jokes in the first place,
mm-hmm.
people wouldn't know what's offensive?
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's a good movie. I'm not saying it's a bad movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm saying it has its charm, and I'm saying I like the parts, the funny parts of it that are not offensive. But also, we're acknowledging what's offensive and kind of like trying to move past that and learn from it.
Mm-hmm.
Which will make us better people and better artists.
Mm-hmm. So, again, it's difficult to make comedy that transcends generations.
It is, which is why comedy is very hard. It's a very hard genre.
But what are the chances that people are going to be still going to be watching the same comedy movies for the next 50 years? What are the chances?
Depends on the generation that you were raised in. Maybe comedy now to us, like Brooklyn Nine-Nine, would be like, oh, it's not offensive, but maybe in 50 years it would be offensive.
Yeah.
You
in
never
the next
know.
15 years, maybe.
Education is always growing, and people will know more, like, they will know more stuff in the future that we might not know now.
Art and film is always
changing. It's always expanding.
It's always expanding, always changing according to the times. Which what makes it so interesting.
And which makes it beautiful. Yeah. You can see where one thing grows from one point into, like, 50 years into the future.
Mm-hmm.
You never know where it's going to go.
Mm-hmm. So interesting. Can't believe we're having this kind of deep conversation after watching, you know, a whack-ass movie like All's Well Ends Well. But before we officially end this episode, let's close this session with our favorite and least favorite parts of the movie. And then we'll tell the listeners what we rate, what our rating is for All's Well Ends Well.
I like the part where he hit his head and then he got brought to the doctor and the doctor was listing, like, his symptoms.
That was funny. That was really funny. My favorite part was anything with Leslie Cheung in it. I'm not even kidding. I love him so much.
The foot massage scene.
The foot massage scene was really funny. It was really funny. The part where Teresa Mo just went into the house with her motorcycle.
That was
really funny. I couldn't stop laughing at that one. And the mahjong scene. Wow. I play mahjong personally. and all those jokes. I understand Cantonese a little bit, so the puns were really funny for me.
You got the jokes.
Yeah.
So rating?
Rating.
I think I'd give
out
it
of 10.
Like a 6.5 or 7.
Okay, that's pretty high.
Yeah, because like I still like the aspects that were like good about it. Yeah. Like, it's still whack, you know.
For a rom-com. Judging it as a rom-com.
It's still whack. It's a whack-ass film, like we said. But then I just didn't like the offensive things. But overall, like, I think it still could be a pioneer to push comedy to, like, another level.
I would give it an 8 out of 10. Oh my god, you're really judging me. I'm giving it an 8 out of 10. I could give it a 10, but because so much of the jokes were racist, I'm giving it an, like, racist and offensive, I'm giving it an 8. Just because a lot of those things were offensive.
But I do get where you're coming from with why you like it. Like, I'm not saying that because of the offense, I'm ew, no. I'm just saying, like, there are good things and bad things, like I said.
Yeah. But everything else to me, it was perfect. The cliches, the overused stereotypes, it was hilarious to me. So I'm giving it an 8 out of 10. But as always, just like every other movie that we review, we really recommend you checking the movie out.
Yeah, for sure. Like, it's overall, it's like, it has its own charm, it has its own good parts of the film, so go watch it.
And I
think, since you've supposedly watched the film already, maybe you rewatch it.
Yeah.
That would be
revisit
a better word.
Revisit it after, like, listening to this podcast. But anyway, I think that's our time. We've talked a lot about about Oswa Enzo, about what we think about the language of comedy and all that today, and I think it was a really fun episode. And
I guess we'll see you next week.
Yeah, we'll be seeing you guys next week.
And we'll be doing Saving Face.
Another rom-com.
It's a with Asian American lesbian rom-com. Really good. I dig that.
Okay. It's Manda's choice next week. But anyway,
we'll see you
next
week. Bye.
Bye.